So welcome to iFormRx, where we explore the evidence that matters to ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, Editor-in-Chief of iFormRx, and joining me today is Megan Rosenthal and Sina Haynes to talk about self-regulated strategies to lose weight. The results of the study of novel approaches to weight gain prevention, also known as the SNAP study, were recently published in the June 2016 issue of JAMA Internal Medicine. Doctors Haynes, Rosenthal, and their colleague, Dr. Lori Ward, from the University of Mississippi School of Pharmacy, wrote a commentary for iFormRx entitled Go Big, recommending large behavior changes to prevent weight gain in young adults. Megan and Sina, thank you for joining me today for the iFormRx podcast.
Thank you so much for having us. Thank you for the opportunity to join the discussion today.
So if you had to briefly summarize in four sentences or less the study entitled Innovative Self-Regulation Strategies to Reduce Weight Gain in Young Adults, the study of novel approaches to weight gain prevention, or SNAP, randomized clinical trial, to someone who hasn't read the paper, what would you say?
The SNAP study was a weight control program and a study funded by the National Institutes of Health with a goal of teaching young adults strategies to help adopt healthier lifestyles and prevent the weight gain that typically occurs between ages 18 and 35. Folks in the trial were randomly assigned into one of three groups over the 3 years of the study. So one group, it was self-regulation with small changes. So that basically meant daily small changes and a primary approach of diet and exercise. And the second group was self-regulation with large changes. And this group had periodic weight loss and a target set to about 5 to 10 pounds to help buffer against weight gain, or you could be in the third arm or third group that was self-guided. Small changes, participants whose daily weigh-in showed their weight increasing, were asked to drop about 100 calories a day from their diet and increase their physical activity levels, whereas those in the large changes group were asked to increase physical activity levels to about 250 minutes a week after initially losing the 5 to 10 pounds.
So the results of this study were done in a couple of different ways. The first were some pairwise comparisons across the three groups, which yielded some statistically significant differences. There was less weight gain and some weight loss in the small and large change intervention arms relative to the control group, and in the large change group relative to the small change group. Furthermore, it was found that weight gain was significantly less common in the large change group versus the small change group and the control arm.
So, Megan, what do you believe are the key strengths and weaknesses of the SNAP study? And are there any confounders present in this study that you believe may have impacted the results?
So we identified four kind of major trial strengths. And the first was the length of the follow-up period, which, as Sina mentioned, was 3 years. And this is significantly longer than the bulk of the other literature that's been published in this area. The trial also was able to boast a very low attrition rate, number of patients that were lost over time. The trial also integrated some fidelity assessments over the course of the study. And these assessments were to determine how closely the intervention were followed. Unfortunately, again, for the study, these fidelity assessments were ranked rather highly. And finally, the collection of multiple process measures, such as change in caloric deficit, self-weighing, and levels of physical activity, were also made. And so this just lends credence to the results that suggested that weight gain was less in both of the intervention arms of the study. With respect to the limitations, we identified three limitations there. The first was, despite the author's efforts to recruit at least 25% of the sample male, the majority of the sample still was female. Folks also had to attend 10 small meetings up front for the first 4 months of the study, and we wondered whether or not this was a realistic goal to achieve in real-life practice. And finally, in addition to reducing caloric intake by 5 to 1,000 calories per day below baseline levels for 8 weeks, the large change group was also asked to gradually increase activity levels until they reached a target of 250 minutes per week. They then were instructed to maintain exercise at this level for the course of the study. And again, here we questioned whether or not these targets were realistic. With respect to the confounders, we didn't identify any major confounders that would have influenced the results of the study.
So, Megan, you know, what do you see are the novel or innovative strategies implemented in the study? After all, that's the name of the study, novel interventions, novel strategies for weight gain prevention. Can health professionals and patients realistically implement these strategies? You've mentioned some that you question, but on a broad sense, do you think these are implementable? And what do you see are the biggest barriers and how we might overcome those?
We think one of the major novel strategies of this trial was that it suggests that tinkering with diet and activity levels based on daily weight fluctuations may be a more successful strategy to prevent weight gain over a lifetime. And this study also provides some initial evidence that large change interventions are beneficial for weight gain prevention among young adults aged 18 to 35 years. As we know, sustaining behavior change, especially as it relates to diet and exercise, is really difficult. One of the benefits of this particular approach is that it doesn't require a consistent commitment. Rather, it requires the patient to self-monitor and then make adjustments as needed. One of the significant barriers to this approach will be that participants in the study had access to nutritionists, exercise physiologists, physicians, health educators, psychologists, etc. And of course, not all patients would have access to such a diverse number of clinicians. And another potential barrier is the body mass index inclusion criteria, which was between 21 and 30 kilograms per meter squared. Of course, in regular practice, we see patients with a much higher BMI. That being said, I think some of the basic ideas about self-regulation that were presented in this study and the idea of tracking your weight over time and in a regular fashion are certainly things that patients and clinicians could implement.
Sina, I want you to imagine you have a 29-year-old Hispanic woman who comes to your pharmacy to refill OrthoEvra for contraception. Now, you've known this patient for many, many years, and she asks for your advice. She has struggled with her weight after the birth of her daughter 4 years ago. She's 5'4", weighs 180 pounds, and has a BMI of 31. She has a family history of type 2 diabetes. Both her mother and maternal grandmother have diabetes. Luckily, she did have a normal glucose during her pregnancy, but her older sister had gestational diabetes during her two pregnancies. The patient admits that she's not much for exercise and can't really afford to go to the gym anyway. She and her husband work relatively low-wage jobs and struggle to make ends meet. Fortunately, the family has health insurance through an employer-sponsored health plan, but the patient finds the copays really expensive. She and her husband had talked about having another child, but there is no concrete plans at this time. What would be your approach to weight management in this case? What strategies would you use to prevent further weight gain and perhaps encourage weight loss? And would you even consider a pharmacological intervention to supplement lifestyle recommendations? What are the short and long-term health consequences you are most concerned about in this case?
So based on the SNAP study that we're discussing today, we could apply the findings here, as this is a patient who is a prime example where an intervention designed to help produce weight loss and decrease her risk of developing type 2 diabetes is very relevant. So asking her to frequently weigh herself and either initial weight loss or daily small changes to both diet and activity to help prevent weight gain, or a large change in dietary intake and physical activity. I think based on the SNAP study, there's no harm in trying to buffer against future weight gain based on her risk. So her risk factors certainly need to be focused on so that we can try and prevent diabetes in her future. Alternatively, and based on this case you've presented, she's not much for exercise and had commented on not being able to afford going to a gym. We could also consider her for pharmacotherapy as post-intensive lifestyle modification. But given that she is interested in potentially becoming pregnant, again, it does limit our options. One agent in particular I would not want to consider due to teratogenic risk is the fenfluramine-topiramate combination. But I think given her past medical history or family history and the handwriting on the wall, she could be a prime candidate to consider a trial of a GLP-1 receptor agonist, again, though, coupled with lifestyle modification. So for me, I would be most concerned that she is on her way to developing type 2 diabetes and the whole host of other conditions that we know come with the onset of diabetes and the progression of diabetes.
Well, thank you, Megan and Sina, for joining us today to discuss the SNAP study and evidence-based strategies to prevent weight gain in adults. It's clear from your comments that you believe the two strategies used in the SNAP study are effective in preventing weight gain, and recommending large changes actually resulted in weight loss. Well, tell us what you think by posting a comment. Only iFormRx members can leave comments and use other interactive features on the site. You can become a member of iFormRx. It's free. Sign up today. And until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFormRx, signing off.